You're listening to Stumptown Vegans, episode number 8. On this episode, we interview Nick Zukin from ExtraMSG.com. Because of the length of this discussion, we've decided to split this interview into two parts. Please download episode number 9 to hear the second half of this interview to hear what vegan restaurant has the most potential.
These Stumptown Vegans are joined today by Nick Zukin, restaurateur, food critic, food writer, the magic behind Extra MSG, which is Portland Food, Market, and Dining Guide, and the PortlandFood.org forums. So thank you for joining us, Nick.
Thank you.
And we wanted to just get off the bat, and the reason you're here today is to talk about your experience on the month-long vegan quest. So our first question is, was there a moment that prompted it? How did this come about?
I don't know how it exactly came about, but I've done several different diets, everything from diets to lose weight, diets to just try things. I, for example, did the Governor Challenge where you try to eat on a certain amount per day or per week or whatever. And I just thought it'd be an interesting challenge to try to be a vegan for a month. I thought a week sounded like it'd be too easy, and so I thought a month would be more interesting and also give me a chance. I didn't cook for myself. I thought that'd be a little too easy as well, and I thought it'd be more interesting to find out what Portland has to offer for vegans. I had a friend who runs DallasFood.org, and he spent a while going to high-end restaurants as a vegetarian in Dallas, and you know, Dallas vegetarianism is like probably even more rare than veganism in Portland. So it was a bit of a challenge for him, and it resulted in interesting reports. And so I thought it might be interesting for people who read Portland Food and for myself.
Well, kudos, and we're glad to hear you don't entirely hate vegans, because you're here today, so thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
So you had mentioned that you've done other sorts of culinary challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And what was your most recent?
I think I hadn't done too many since opening the restaurants, just because of lack of time.
Mm-hmm.
I did have an employee once who was starting to gain some weight working for us, and so we had this 2-month challenge to see who could lose the most weight in 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went ultra low carb during that, and that was probably the most recent thing.
Yeah. And who lost the most weight? Who won?
Me.
Congratulations.
Thanks. I've gained it all back since.
Well, I guess we'll go off the bat, and which vegan restaurant made the biggest impression on you?
Which vegan
All
restaurant
vegan or vegetarian?
Okay, which restaurant that serves vegan and vegetarian
mm-hmm.
food?
Mm-hmm.
In a positive way or a negative way? Or
any.
Or both.
It's probably tough. I don't know if one stood out so much. I think the thing that was maybe most surprising to me was the way that the vegan restaurants approached their offerings overall. I really expected to get more vegetables, especially during the summer.
Mm-hmm.
That was by far the biggest surprise, and was just that it was so starch heavy.
Mm-hmm.
It's of course going to be tough to get proteins. I knew it might be tough to get proteins. I mean, you basically have like tofu, beans.
Mm-hmm.
Different legumes, but
greens.
So you're saying you were not impressed with the fried potato offerings around the city?
Yeah, I'm kind of anti-starch to begin with. I like stuff with lots of flavor, and so I really love vegetables. I grew up with a garden in my backyard almost my entire life, growing up in rural Oregon most of the time, and I love vegetables. I love fruits, and it being summer, which I would not have done this in the winter, but in many ways at the vegan restaurants around town, I'd be surprised if it'd be that much different, the food offerings.
Yeah, honestly, they don't really change their menus that often.
Yeah, it didn't seem like it.
There's a couple places that'll change their menu options, but it's pretty rare.
I think the only place that specifically was vegan that I had eaten at before this was Nutshell, mm-hmm. which did have a certain bit of seasonality to mm-hmm. it and did emphasize produce. And so I was actually looking forward to a little bit of that, at least. I mean, I knew most of the places in Portland emphasized low-cost options, mm-hmm. But I thought there'd be a little bit more of that, that there'd be a little bit more awareness and an effort on the part of the vegan restaurateurs to actually use the great produce that we have in Portland.
I think Nutshell stood out not just as, like, you know, it was vegan at a time, then it was vegetarian at a time. It wasn't really as a vegan restaurant. It was more as the upscale or the artisan vegan mm-hmm. restaurant that Portland really hadn't seen since Calendula, I guess. Did you dine there when it was
I never
there?
Went to Calendula, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, now that Nutshell is no longer around, it seems like the new Blossoming Lotus and Portobello have kind of filled that high-end restaurant spot.
Yeah, I never hit the new Blossoming Lotus. I had been to Blossoming Lotus before. I went with a bunch of friends from Portland Food. It's so close to Kenny and Zook's that it was an easy lunch. And I really wasn't impressed.
I hate going there for lunch.
He also feels so, like, out of shape with all the people in their yoga mats.
Yeah.
It definitely fits into the Pearl, all the pretty people getting with their yoga mats and workout gear. But yeah. I wasn't too impressed with Blossoming Lotus, so I don't know. I just never made the effort to go to the new restaurant. Mm-hmm. I probably should have, but I just had other places on my list. I did go to Portobello. It was one of the last places I went to. I went to It and Proper Eats actually after I was done with the 30 days.
Because oh, okay.
I went on a trip for a wedding in Idaho and Wyoming. So I kind of got less places in Portland than I originally wanted to. And so I wanted to hit a couple more. And so I extended it by about 2 days.
And you stayed vegan while you were on that trip, right?
I did, which made it tougher. Everybody was pretty much saying, you're so stupid, that's stupid. Just give it up for a week, it's no big deal. And it's like, thought it'd be kind of interesting, okay.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
you know, a real vegan has to deal with this. They go on a trip somewhere mm-hmm. that's, you know, in the Midwest or the Rocky Mountain states or the South or something where veganism is, you know, like incest or something. So
yeah, my family, I have some dirty secret, I have cattle ranchers in my family and they tell me I'm putting them out of business and stuff, so I totally understand that.
Yeah, I show them the demographics on veganism. I don't think they have anything to worry about anytime soon.
Well, I wanted to say for the record real quick that I only hate going to Blossoming Lotus for lunch because I can never fit it in within an hour. So I just wanted to say that.
Because the service is so slow or because...
Yeah, it's packed.
Yeah, it is tiny. It is tiny. And it's definitely got that that hippie sort of, you know, we've got our own time sort of thing.
Yep.
But I've had some good things there, but I don't know. Mostly it was lacking.
Well, you...
So before you started, there's probably some vegan facts or myths that you heard. Prior to your challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have any of those? Well, first, can you tell me what some of those were and whether or not they were debunked?
Probably the one that was most surprising to me were health issues. When I went in, you know, people would ask me, so are you doing this just to lose weight? And I was like, no, that'd be great if I did lose some weight during it. I mean, that'd be a great bonus, but I'm doing it more just out of interest, you know. It's more of an experiment for me. But I kind of expected, hey, maybe I'd lose like 5 pounds or something. And I ended up gaining 15 in a month. So that was a big surprise. And I think the biggest part of it was the emphasis on carbs.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, in my own anecdotal experience, the whole thing that that the low carbers and the people who talk about glycemic index is actually true. Your blood sugar spikes do make you hungrier. I was eating like, you know, 4 or 5 times a day just because I felt hungry. And maybe because I didn't eat much starch even growing up, it's never been one of the things I like. I like proteins and I like vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never been much of a sweets person when I was growing up. I never really had those sorts of spikes before. My wife will sometimes get so shaky when she's hungry that she just has to eat right now. Otherwise, she will tear my head off. But I never really felt that. I'd say that I've never really been hungry until I was a vegan. And I'd get those...
And I've heard that across... I've heard that from a lot of people when they first go vegan. Yeah. They're hungry. And
do you think that's because you're eating more simple carbohydrates as opposed to complex carbohydrates?
Well, I was eating lots of complex carbohydrates, way more than I normally eat. I mean, the only carbohydrates I really like are fruits, I mean, that I really love or crave. You know, I love being in Oregon during the summer because of all the berries. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, obviously those are mostly fructose, which affects the blood sugar differently than other carbs. Mm-hmm. But I don't really eat that many complex carbs, but I was eating them, and I was definitely not having the benefit of the tummy feel of being full, but also it was just this this craving in my brain more for food that I hadn't really experienced before.
Interesting.
Let me ask you, from reading, you know, the little bit that you have written up on your vegan quest, or, you know, the much that you've written up, you seem to miss salads. Have you been eating salads now, or you seem to be disappointed you couldn't find a lot of salads in Portland?
It was more just vegetables, but I was surprised that that you couldn't find some interesting salads, because I mean, a salad's an easy way to get a decent amount of bulk, to get nice green veggies, to put proteins such as nuts and beans along with veggies in an easy way. I mean, I know that a lot of vegans would respond, it's like, well, you know, salads are easy, we make them at home, we get sick of them, which I kind of understand. I kind of wondered why you don't get sick of all the, you know, starchy mush that's out there. But, you know, I think you can do a lot with a salad, even without, you know, classic proteins to make a real good meal. And, I mean, you'd see it at the high-end restaurants when I'd have them make me something vegan, whether it was like some sort of heirloom tomato salad or something with beans or lentils or whatever that was built around whatever's fresh at the market. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to see that, and I would think that food cost-wise it wouldn't be too bad unless they're wasting a lot of food. I just don't know. You know, I don't really understand the market entirely.
I don't know. Like, a lot of the time, like, a salad, grilled tofu or tempeh appeals to me. But there's not a lot of places you see it. Yeah. And then there's a lot of times where you try it and you go, oh, that's so bland.
You know, what's interesting for me is there's a new food cart that you're a big fan of, Sunny Bowl. And it's just really simple, just, you know, grains, and they do like, soy curls on it or something. And, you know, it's very, very simple, right? But it's got a nice dressing. That's pretty much what I eat every day. I don't eat at Sunny Bowl, but I make like a big greens and put in some tofu and some grains or beans and dressing, and that's my salad every day. And I have a hard time going to Sunny Bowl. Not to pick on Sunny Bowl specifically.
No, I've heard it from other people too who go, oh, I just make this all
but
the
time. It's $5, you know, and I make like two or three times that, and I eat it like throughout my work day.
But did you remember to bring it to work?
Yes. I have been very good at that lately.
I don't. I mean, I forget.
Yeah. So I think that might be a reason why some of these fail, because, you know, $5 for something that's fairly small, where you'd want to eat two of those for a real meal, I wonder if that's one of the reasons why these things have failed.
Could be. It could be also tough from the restaurant side, you know, just having a little bit of insight in the restaurant side. Mm-hmm. A lot of the stuff that goes into salads spoils.
Yeah.
And so if you don't have the volume to justify it, it's tough for them. It's not so much that they can't get a good cost ratio. It's just that people don't eat enough of it, or they don't eat it in 3 days and it's busy for 3 days or whatever. It's cold outside and they decide not to have salads, and suddenly you've got a bunch of stuff that's molding or whatever. I imagine that plays a part of it too. Whereas, you know, rice is going to keep forever. Mm-hmm. And even if you cook it and put it in the fridge or something, you can put it on the steam table the next day and you've got mush again. So.
Yeah.
AKA why I buy spinach and chard instead of lettuce a lot of the time, because I forget to go through it. But I wanted to ask you, and because, again, we are very much in admiration of your restaurant expertise, and what do you think, even not just in the vegan culinary scene, what does the Portland culinary world need? Three sentences, not just in vegan? Yeah, not just in vegan. You know, what do you think the Portland culinary world needs?
You know, I think I've been here since like 97 maybe, so maybe 12 years now. And it's hugely changed here in that time, gotten so much better. You know, a lot of things I wished for over time actually exist now. And I don't feel anymore like I'm missing one specific thing. I more now think we could use some more depth and specificity. You know, we've got some great Mexican places, for example, some great Thai places, great Indian places, things that personally I really enjoy in, like, say, ethnic foods, or say Kenny and Zook's as an example of a really good deli, Jewish deli, or some great pizza places, some great sandwich places. But it doesn't mean that there can't be more depth and broadening, so that say you've got a place that emphasizes Chicago deep dish pizza or Sicilian pizzas or whatever. And same thing in Thai. We've got places that are doing Northern Thai, but there could be a place doing Southern Thai, mm-hmm. or whatever. I mean, there could be a place doing Yucatecan food or whatever.
Do we really need another Thai restaurant?
Well, that's the thing. All the Thai restaurants out there are mostly all the same.
Yeah.
And they've got this, like, set menu. A lot of them are run by Vietnamese or Cambodians, mm-hmm. Some even Chinese.
Yeah, and they just put Thai in the name because they know people understand Thai and like Thai.
Yeah, and it's kind of, I mean, it's a trendy thing. It's like a new Chinese. I mean, you know, 50 years ago, you'd have all these Chinese places that are there because the food was pretty good and pretty cheap, and, you know, that's basically it. And same thing with Thai now. I mean, you have a lot of flavor for less than $10, and people are happy with that. But you see the same dishes over and over again. And if you go to Thailand, most of those dishes are done a little bit differently, with produce that's hard to get here. And you see other dishes that are way more common. I mean, on the streets of Thailand, the most common things are soups, really. Mm-hmm. Noodle soups that are probably more similar to what you get in a lot of Vietnamese restaurants than the soups that you'll get in most Thai restaurants.
Well, let me ask you, did you eat any vegan food, did you eat any Thai food during your month as a vegan?
I did. I went to, actually I ate too much Thai food because when I was in like Idaho and Wyoming, it was kind of like, oh man, what am I going to eat? Do I want to go to some grill place and hopefully they have a mushroom burger or something? You know, or maybe I'll get some French fries and a salad and have them hold everything on the salad. So I'd end up at Thai places.
So how did you go about presenting yourself as a vegan to these restaurants you're going to? Thai or not, you know, how did you deal with the special ingredients? Did you say I'm vegan or did you explain yourself?
It kind of depended. You know, some people knew right off what I meant, but I would usually emphasize, no dairy, no eggs, no shrimp paste, you know, if it's that sort of thing. I did a little bit of research, such as checking into, like, the commercial curry paste for Thai restaurants, for example.
Kudos.
To make sure that, to look at them. I mean, most of them I had at home already, but to see if they actually do have shrimp paste and fish sauce in them, and most of them don't, so that makes it relatively easy. You can just tell people no fish sauce and shrimp paste, and I'm sure they're happy to not do anything that would cost them more money. But so I did a little bit of research into those things. I mean, there are some things that were surprising. Like, I didn't find out till nearly the end that most soy cheeses aren't vegan.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and I only found out because I was bored at the Boise co-op and was looking through the fake cheeses and noticed, hey, these all have milk proteins in them.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that kind of defeats the purpose. And then you have to separate out, you know, the rare vegan fake cheese. So
yeah, I was looking at some of your photos and I saw a burger that you had gotten that had fake cheese on it, and I was like, that doesn't look like this. The vegan fake cheese.
Yeah, and it's very possible. I set out at the beginning and said, you know, I'm gonna do my best effort.
Oh yeah, I'm not putting you down.
No, I'm just saying that, you know, you could be really obsessive about it and go through, but I think it'd make it really tough. And there were some things that I, you know, was kind of hesitant to worry too much about, such as honey. But in general,
there's always a learning curve.
Yeah. And I'm sure some people say, I mean, I didn't go back into any kitchens, or, you know, I didn't take any food home and have it tested for, you know, proteins or whatever. So, I mean, you know, it's quite possible that in Idaho Falls that some lady said, yeah, no shrimp paste, no fish sauce, and there's really fish sauce in it, or
yeah,
whatever.
Seems like that's pretty common around here.
I would think so. I mean, it's, I don't know.
Besides Thai restaurants, how are you perceived at some of the upscale places that you ate at? And did you call ahead beforehand?
I always called ahead on the upscale restaurants and made a reservation. I used a fake name on all the reservations. Well, not a fake name, but I used my wife's maiden name on all the reservations so that, because I know some of the people and stuff, I didn't want them to see my reservation 2 days ahead and go, oh, we got to do something extra special or something.
Yeah.
So I usually make a reservation about a day ahead and just explain to them exactly what the issues were. And then I called probably 30 or more restaurants. I actually have a spreadsheet at home that has like what everybody said as far as like what their options were. Some of them surprised me. For example, I called both Blue Hour and Clark Lewis. And Clark Lewis, I expected, because they have this history of, you know, market fresh food and they're in Southeast and stuff, to be pretty welcoming to vegans. But Blue Hour was much more welcoming. They offered to make something special off the menu. They went through the menu and talked about what they could do and stuff. And at Clark Lewis, which is owned by the same person as Blue Hour, they're kind of like, well, we don't really have much. We got some salads that we could make vegan. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah. So did you go through, like, you know, whoever picked up the phone, like the host? Did anyone ever consult the chefs? I'm just curious.
Sometimes, I think at Blue Hour, possibly, maybe it was somewhere else, they actually, I talked to the chef. They like said, you know, I'm not entirely sure, but let me grab the chef. And I usually called, you know, sometime around like 3 or something like that, when they weren't expected to be too busy and I wasn't going to be, you know, hassling anybody during a rush or anything like that. So
the places that you ate at had beautiful looking food, and I have to say that our experiences at some of the higher end restaurants have been completely different.
Oh really?
Even in calling ahead beforehand.
I say like every other fancy Christmas dinner I go to, or seasonal dinner I go to with my office, 1 year we call ahead and we get confirmations and then it's just disappointing and bland, and then the next I'm impressed, but then the next year, that's it.
They're mostly holiday meals.
Yeah, these are usually,
well,
these
holiday
are,
meals almost exclusively have the second string working that night.
Well, these are usually like set aside, you know, dinners, like, and we never do it the week of Christmas. It's always like early December, so because my boss is always worried that we're gonna get, you know, shifted like that.
I did generally go into early dinner, so I wasn't ever. Maybe a couple times, Wildwood, I was there during busy time. So, you know.
I have to say Wildwood was my best experience so far.
Nice. I would expect that. And I've always loved Wildwood. So,
yeah.
And I had a really good meal there.
Well, can you tell us about your experience at Late Pigeon? Because according to your site, it looks like it was your best dessert of the experience.
Oh, it was easily the best dessert of the experience, which was one of my favorite dishes probably of the whole experience. And that was the most surprising to me. I had actually narrowed it to a few places I was going to go. I was looking at Carlisle, Selgree, and Le Pigeon. And I geared myself towards places that were the most welcoming on the phone, basically. I wanted to go to places that said, yeah, we've got something special, or we can do something special for you. And I never, like, asked them if they could do that. It was, like, if they offered. I was really surprised that Selgree didn't offer to do anything and didn't have pretty much anything, because some people had said that they probably would. Carlisle was really welcoming, and I was tempted to go there, but when I just called I wasn't even going to call the pigeon. I didn't call Beast because I know what their status is. But I was really surprised when I called the pigeon. I mean, they're pretty strict over there. I mean, they make 5 burgers a night. And if you don't get one of those 5 burgers, you're out of luck. You know, there's definitely, I mean, they're small. They can do what they want. And they don't have to cater to anybody if they don't want to. Mm-hmm. They're definitely popular enough. But they were probably the most welcoming of anybody on the phone, or definitely one of the top few most welcoming. I mean, really wanting to go through things, really interested, and sounding excited about it. And they were easily the best prepared when I got there. I mean, they were just a step above everybody else on preparedness.
Did they explain what your meal would be before you got there? Say, is this okay? Are you okay eating pasta? Do you eat zucchini? I've gotten that question before.
Yeah, I avoided risottos like the plague. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I don't even think I ate one risotto. I think if any place was like, well, we've got a risotto, I'd like, I think I'll find somewhere else. Yeah.
Was your dinner there on par with your dessert, you know, and your appetizer? Was everything as equally as wonderful, or did the dessert really stand out?
Well, the dessert partially stood out because the desserts at most places weren't very good.
Did you get sorbet?
Decent, but, yeah, sorbet was like 90% of the desserts at high-end places. Mm-hmm. Sorbet generally with a side of cookies that I couldn't eat, so my wife ate them. You know, and some of the sorbets were better than others. Some of them were, you know, quite good. But generally, they didn't try too hard on desserts, which is somewhat understandable. But then again, it's not that hard to make a pretty good vegan dessert in summer, you know, because you have all these great fruits. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that dessert was great. It would have been great if I wasn't a vegan. I mean, it was just a really terrific dessert.
Can you explain it a little bit?
Sure. It was a grilled peach on the bottom, which was really nicely grilled. Still had lots of flavor. Sometimes when you cook a fruit, it mm-hmm. goes bland. Mm-hmm. But this didn't. It was still bright and sweet. And then it had, I'm going to forget some of the stuff that it had, though. I know it had a cinnamon crisp mm-hmm. on it, which was really tasty. And it had some berries. And I'd have to look to see what else it had, but it was just really delicious. It was really balanced with flavors and textures.
Mm-hmm. And was that custom, or was that on the menu?
No, it was custom. Yeah, all their desserts, I looked at the desserts when we came in. I was like, oh man, I really love the desserts here. It's too bad they don't have anything even remotely vegan on
was
their
that,
menu.
Is that something you could see on a menu as a dessert, or do you think that would not fly?
Oh, I don't see any reason why it wouldn't. I mean, I once had a dessert at Genoa that was just a ripe peach, so I don't see why not. I mean, I think it was a great dessert, a great summer dessert. I mean, most of the desserts on their menu are pastries that have no seasonality to them whatsoever, and this was very seasonal. Mm-hmm. I think it was a great dessert. I think probably the only thing that was really lacking in the Le Pigeon dinner was that the portion sizes weren't the best for the price, but mm-hmm. Just compared to my wife got like halibut. It was a giant piece of halibut, and you know, it wasn't like they were bad or anything. It's just that
it's a surprise when you realize you're paying $12 for a salad sometimes.
Yeah. Thanks for listening to the first half of our interview with Nick. Download the second part of this interview, where we continue the discussion on the price of vegan food, among other topics. And don't forget to visit StumptownVegans.com for great restaurant reviews. Thanks for listening.